Hey, 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 we're back after 100 years. Black Girls Laughing is here.
So, funny story for y'all. We recorded an episode to go up last week, and apparently Brittany's just disappeared.
Evaporated. It's my own damn fault. I didn't do what I was supposed to do right after we recorded, and when we went to look at it, you know, on the Wednesday before, it just disappeared. So I'm not going to be an asshole this week, and I'm going to download and upload and do all the things I'm supposed to export, all that shit, as soon as the episode's over, so we don't have that error.
Yeah, because at this point we've just been struggling to get you guys anything.
Yeah, no, like, I think we spent a good majority of last week's episode that we just, it doesn't exist anymore, just, you know, catching up on all the things that have happened in our life, have happened in, you know, the world, and, well, that's just never going to be. So, anyways, we're just going to move forward. We're not going to catch up on all that shit. You're just going to have to figure it out. If you haven't listened to 444, you're late. If you haven't, if you don't know the name of Beyonce's kids, you're late. I think you can catch up. So
yeah, you can catch up. Some things we talked about, I look back now and I'm like, oh, if you didn't see that Nelson Ellis, aka Lafayette from True Blood, passed away, you're late. Yeah, that's pretty much the John.
Yeah, from last week. Yeah, last week. Oh, Robin China.
Oh, that's all. Yeah, you're late. You're the most late. Even people that don't care about it, aka us, know what's happening. So, like, you're way late.
Yep.
Also, to start this off, if you can't tell, I can hear it. I don't know if it picks up in the microphone, but I am losing my voice. I screamed a little too hard Friday at a concert, apparently, and maybe it's a combination of that plus just being tired, as I just got home from New York maybe an hour ago. So my voice goes out. If I squeak while saying something, you will have something to laugh at, and that is why.
All right. So let's do this, John.
Let's do the John.
So last week, the Emmy nominations came out. And a lot of people got nominated for things. I like the Emmy nominations because it's like TV's really freaking black, so there's a lot of black shows to be excited about when the Emmy nominations happen. So, yay TV. The biggest thing is Atlanta, Black-ish, are both nominated for Best Comedy Series, with Master of None. So all the people of color are, like, being killing represented. It. But where's Insecure? Where is Insecure? That's just my, like, it, that's, like, the big snub story that I'm just, like, really upset about, because the first season of Insecure was perfection. Was pure perfection.
That was and too black.
Yeah,
I'm being in like what? in a way. Black?
What?
In a way that
black in Atlanta.
I'm saying that's what I'm saying. Like, my follow up to that is too black in a way that painted black women, in particularly, in a light that you only see white women really. Like, struggling with relationships. Like, I don't want to compare it to Girls, because that show was unrealistic for most people I know. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. But, like, there was so much humanity in Insecure, and so much realistic relationships between the friendships, between the romantic relationships, that was too humane and too black for people to comprehend.
Yeah, I hear you with that, but then I call back with, like, the Thanksgiving episode of Master of None, which is very black and very female and shows humanity. And so it's like almost like they don't care that a black... They don't care about that a black woman... No, because Lena wrote her episode, too. Yeah, I mean, it is only one episode.
Small dose.
Yeah, but also, you know, they got nominated for writing of that episode. Like, that's the episode that was nominated. Like, that's the main episode that is giving it all this critically acclaimedness. I'm just hoping that, you know, it's sort of that, like, freshman thing. Like, it's your first year with your show. I mean, even though, again, Atlanta, but again, Donald Glover has been around the block a little bit longer, so he gets to have that, like, push up. And maybe if she had won something at the Golden Globes, if she had won she was nominated for Best Actress in a Comedy, if Issa Rae had won that, maybe she would have gotten this the shine of the Emmys. But I just feel like it's just a waste. I mean, but, like, second season better get all types of nominations. It also just feels like HBO wasn't, like, gunning for her show.
No.
They were gunning for the Westworld and the Game of Thrones. Oh, actually, Game of Thrones is not nominated because of how the season happened. But that's, again, that's them playing the game of Hollywood to make sure that they get as many wins as possible, delaying shows and delaying things so stuff's not eligible. You know, Game of Thrones is starting this week, so their next season isn't, so this current season isn't available today, you know?
Yeah.
But, again, did we need Modern Family still?
Yeah.
Like, you could have bumped Modern Family out of this and put in Insecure. It is not 2010. Like, Modern Family is not groundbreaking. Modern Family is tired. I don't know anyone who watches Modern Family.
Yeah, I also still wonder if, like, Issa Rae is still a little indie for people. Like, she's had her big break. If you, like, watch Misadventures, or if, like, that's something you particularly pay attention to, because I guess my pushback with Master of None is, yeah, they're getting nominated for writing that episode, but the door to even see that episode was that people wanted to see Aziz Ansari. So, like, whatever he's a part of, people are gonna do.
Yeah, I...
Like, I don't. I think it should have been nominated for everything. So I'm not saying.
Yeah. No, we're just trying to understand, like, what is their thinking? Why would whoever does the Emmys, I don't care enough to know them. I'm, like, saying the Associated Press, but I know that's the Golden Globes. Whoever does the Emmys, I don't do television, so I don't have to know your names. Like, why did it, like, you know, it's not about, like, ratings are never a part of what makes prestige television. And I know that the show did really well because they push it out so much at HBO in terms of getting black people, at the very least, to get a free trial of HBO Now. Like, it is always, see Insecure, get HBO Now and watch it and you'll be set, you know? I don't know. I just feel like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt didn't have to be there. Like,
it wasn't good. The season was not good. I think it's hysterical that Hell No was nominated for an Emmy as a song.
Hell No?
Yeah, the Hell No, I ain't playing with your meatball. Slow down, I ain't playing with your meatball.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You didn't see that?
No, I did not see that. I just, like, just went right over me.
Well, it was nominated. So,
yeah.
I was wondering, though, because it's to the tune of Lemonade, so, like, I feel like Beyonce should also be
nominated. She should be getting a little credit, right? Yeah. She probably is. That is how she's going to be one step closer to that EGOT.
But it was quite funny to see that was nominated.
Girls didn't get nominated. Lena Dunham didn't get nominated for their final season.
Thank God.
That's like, you guys were smart. Handmaid's Tale got all the nominations with Westworld. I loved Westworld. I'm excited for that show to come back. Handmaid's Tale is just too hard for me to watch.
Never read it. Never saw it.
Frankly, I watched.
Not interested.
It's really good. It's great prestige television. It's exactly what the hell is like. You can feel like, I feel like we're living in the freaking prologue to Handmaid's Tale, and that's what scares me the most, is like feeling that. I'm tired of white ladies going out and doing their Handmaid's Tale protests. That doesn't even happen anymore. That's not helping anyone. And it also shows like the lack of intersectionality and their understanding of medical rights. But anyways, we're not there. We're talking about the Emmys.
That's why I won't watch it. I just read a really good article about that today, and I was like, yeah, that's kind of how I feel. Because it was really interesting when it came out. I did this thing where, like, anytime I went out and people started talking about television or books, I'd be like, oh, have you watched The Handmaid's Tale? And then I would watch, like, who said yes because they read the book. And I had only met one woman of color in any time in, like, the month that I opened up that conversation. And I'm talking, like, I went to different arts events. I went to First Friday. I went to bars. I was out at, like, co-working spaces just talking to women about this. And I only had met one woman of color who had ever said they read that book. And they read it in school. And I was like,
what school?
And I'm like, how did this happen where all the white women I've met have read this book, but somehow I miss this book? And I went to school in Northwest Pennsylvania. Like, I was one of, like, five black people in my whole school. So it's
I mean, I'm with you. I went to, like, liberal-ass suburban Massachusetts school with the whitest people ever, and one, I never saw any of them talk about it on my social media. It's been people that I've met in my post-adult life that they all learned about, that all read this book growing up. And I'm just, again, like, how, where, why didn't it come to our school? And it makes me question some of, like, the thing, like, question it too. Like, who are the people that read that book?
Yeah.
Like, where do their politics lie? Like, why did they, like, why did it happen at your school? And, like, what is, like, the root of your culture that was your thing?
Yeah. I was just like, how did it miss me?
Dang. We're lucky. We're the lucky ones. Oh. But what else is good about this? Oh, I'm excited also for, who is it? Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg. Because they got a nomination for host for a reality competition program for their show, Martha and Snoop's Potluck Dinner Party.
I have not watched that.
I've seen one episode of it, and it's trash. And I just think that it's hilarious. And they're also up against W. Kamau Bell with his show, like, United Shades of America. That's all about, like, race in America on CNN. And, like, they have their weird, like, kind of talking about race conversation through their show. And then he's having, like, genuine conversations with people.
Yikes.
So that's great. I'm also excited for Thandi Newton, for her nomination for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama for Westworld. The Best Supporting Actress for a Drama, of, like, I think, as always, is filled with lots of woman of color. We also have Uzo Aduba for Orange is the New Black, and Samira Wiley for The Handmaid's Tale, nominated in that category. Only reason why I watched The Handmaid's Tale for a few episodes was to see Samira Wiley.
That's really the only reason why I wanted to ever watch it.
I mean, because she's amazing.
Yeah. But I'm not watching Orange is the New Black, so.
I've tried to watch Orange is the New Black, and then I stopped. It just got too stupid. And, yeah.
I keep hearing, like, everything that people keep saying about it, and they're like, oh my god, you should watch it. Like, everything that happens, happens within 3 days. And I'm like, that sounds awful.
Yeah, well, one, it's really hard to believe it. They don't really set it up for you to feel like that's really the case. So
I'm like, that doesn't sound like good writing. That sounds rushed. That sounds like you think that you can just slap shit together because people will watch it either way.
I think that's strong writing. I mean, if you think about, like, what makes great drama, like, from, you know, it usually happens within a day. So they're expanding it to 3 days to do 20 freaking episodes.
I don't like that. That was like when they did. I just don't like when anything feels like it's condensed. I don't like that.
I love, like, one room plays where, like, everything just happens in that one room, and you might have, you know, you get some exposition from, you know, the beginning scene, but, like, all the action, the you know, the plot and the climax all happens in this one space and time.
I don't think it translates well on television.
Okay.
I don't think that doesn't work.
Kind of like, did not like 24.
No. It's kind of like when they, like, try and shove multiple books in a movie. And I don't like when they do the opposite either.
Like, when they expand it and, like, make it 2-3 movies off of one stupid book. And you're like, really? Really, we had to split up the last Hunger Games book? I read that in 2 hours. Like,
I read every single Hunger Games book under 10 hours. Every single one of them. I remember...
They're not dense books.
No. I mean, even The Hobbit, which, like, all of those books are, like, rather long-winded, because that's just how J.R.R. Tolkien writes. Didn't need to be that many movies. It easily could have been 2. But also, those movies were just garbage in general. But I don't like that. Like, the Series of Unfortunate Events movie just felt, like, too rushed. It's too... That needs to be a TV show. Mm-hmm. I don't think Netflix did the best they could have done on the TV show, but those books need to be a TV show.
Did you see the Goosebumps movie?
No.
They did a movie last year.
I didn't even see that. Like, you know how I am. I suck at that.
I mean, I didn't see it. Like, it just sort of, like, appeared. And, you know, it was a movie that was aimed to kids. It was aimed to people my age, hoping that we had kids that we wanted to go see it. And I was like, nah. But that was, like, trying to put all of those books into a movie. Yeah.
Into one?
Yep.
There's so many books. That doesn't make any sense.
It's almost like a night at the museuming it. So, like, all the different characters come to life from the books, or, like, Jumanji-ing it, where they just, like, all just, like, come alive at once, and then now you just deal with all of them instead of each book having its own movie. Yeah. Or, like, you know, series of books. You could take, like, I could see, like, there's so many Goosebumps books. I could see you taking 3 of them, because they're still, like, baby books. They're, like, for, you know, they were for 2-year-olds, like, taking 3, even up to 5, like, and, like, putting them in together. And maybe that's what they did. I didn't see the movie. Maybe it was just, like, the top 5, like, your favorite ones, like the ventriloquist one. And no, that's Are You Afraid of the Dark? I can't even think of what a damn what a Goosebumps book is right now. I know I'm like only thinking of like one episode of the show. Did you ever watch the show of the Goosebumps show?
Yeah, I watched it here and there. I was kind of a scaredy cat as a kid, so
it came on after Power Rangers, so I was like, all right, I'll just keep it on. And they had this one episode where it was like the guy went to summer camp, and he's at summer camp and he thinks there's like a werewolf trying to eat him, but it was actually all a test because he's training to go to Earth. And then like then you like look out and then there like there was the Earth like in the sky. And it's like, oh, what planet are they on?
I don't even, I feel like now I want to read these books again because I don't remember them. Which I feel like I have to. This is such a good segue to the John that I wanted to talk about that I'm just going to use it and I'm going to run use with it. The A Wrinkle in Time trailer dropped with beautiful images. Holy crap. Please have just Ava DuVernay direct just do it all. Just do everything. Just do it all. I want her to do it all. If you haven't seen the trailer, if you haven't seen the photos, everyone looks amazing. Reese Witherspoon, Mindy, Oprah, like, what is, I don't know, is his name Chris Evans?
Yep. Or like, is it Pine? I'm not sure.
I don't know. One of the Chris's, he has, like, big, beautiful, doughy blue eyes. Just, it looks so good, especially if you don't remember the book. I, like, hardly remember the book. The trailer, The trailer brought back a lot of memories, especially when you get to the scene where all the kids are bouncing the ball at the same time and all the houses look the same. I was like, oh my god, yeah, I remember that. And, like, picturing that in my head and being like, that's so creepy. Who would want to live like that? But you have until next year to read them again. So I challenge,
watch the old movie.
Yeah, I challenge all of you to Amazon them or Audible them or
something. Go to the library.
Yeah, buy it, get it out of your local free library and read it again. That's what I'm gonna pick up. And also a reminder that there's more than one book. This is a series of books. My friend and I can only think of four of them. We don't know if there's more than that. But I know I only read the first two. So I'm really, like, I want to pick these books back up and, like, read them again. And then also catch up to the ones that I never read. But it, like, Ava is just, wow. That's all I have to say about this trailer. It's just, like, wow. It looks so beautiful.
Everyone just looks so freaking beautiful. I don't like from Oprah to Mindy to Reese, everyone looks so great. I'm just like, what is going on? I can't wait to see this. I don't even understand what's happening in this trailer, but I'm about it and I cannot wait.
It was just, and then I'm excited because the young girl that's like the lead in this movie is not a name that I recognized. So again, like, oh, and I saw it and I was like, god, I remember reading this book and liking this book, and now I'm like going to see this movie and this little girl looks like me in this freaking book that everybody knows that's being turned into a movie. That's my silent scream of like, god, I just love good representation. It just makes my blood boil and I get so excited, and like, we're just like, everything is just so black and I'm just gonna be at the movies for like the rest of my life, and I never even go to the movies, but I'm gonna go to the movies. 2017 and 2018, B is dropping dough on the movies. You heard it here first.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to 2018. There's nothing else coming out in 2017.
I don't know.
nothing else. There ain't nothing else coming out. You know, that chick that made the Hurt Locker is making some movie about Detroit that doesn't have any black women in it. So, child, we'll talk about that later.
I don't want to.
But yeah, 2018 is like, I'm living for, I'm going to survive 2017 so I can see Black Panther in February and Wrinkle in Time in March, and then I can be done. You can. They better have the trailer ready for the next Wrinkle in Time so I can be excited.
And make it into longer. The next year.
You know, Black Panther better be in the next Avengers movie so at the very least I can live.
Like, help us survive, y'all.
Yeah. Or they need to already have a trailer for the Lando movie with the Star Wars movie about Lando. That Donald Glover's going to be, and that needs to have a trailer out by then I'll be able to survive.
Yes. I want someone also to be like, y'all were wrong, and I want a surprise Beyonce drop trailer of Idris Elba as James Bond. Then I will survive.
Oh, I thought you were saying you were wrong. She will have a new album, and in 2018, we will be blessed with the Rumi Sir album.
I mean, I will also take that, obviously, but that
that's very far flung. That's not gonna happen.
If you can picture the GIF, the meme GIF, y'all, right now. I know some of y'all get this of just the face. In the hand, just saying that's not realistic. It's just not realistic.
I don't know. We got a picture of Rumi and Sir a lot faster than I thought we were going to get a picture.
True that.
So but. If you so yeah, right into our next thing, our final John. Beyonce broke the internet with pictures of her beautiful baby and her looking like a damn goddess, and the internet freaked the hell out. You know, this chick broke her own record. It took a smooth 23 minutes, not even enough to watch a whole damn sitcom, for her to get a million likes on this damn photo on Instagram.
She's like a social media marketer's dream. Like,
well, I mean, she's got the content. Like, there's no marketing involved. It's just... She's made a beautiful picture. We care about what she does. So,
and even y'all who are like salty about it care enough to look at it. Oh, so yeah. Like, you're welcome. Like, thank you for the impressions. Like, thank you for sharing the articles. Even if you're putting like a salty caption or like a salty, but you're still helping her go viral. Like, don't you? Y'all still don't know how the internet works? I'm confused.
It's all about the eyeballs, and she's got them. She's got the haters. She's got the lovers. She's got everyone in between that just gets caught up in the crossfire. They're just all there, ready for it.
And, like, shout out to her haters, because you made her. I don't know. Whatever those tacky, corny sayings are. Because y'all still help her, like, every time. So.
All the time. I felt bad only for the people who had just gotten nominated for Emmys. Were, you know, still, like, excited to talk about that. And then they became no news in, like, the course of 23 minutes.
Like, oh, this is called Pup Beyonce? She did what?
She's like, all right, I might not be nominated for anything, but you guys don't care about it anymore because here are my babies.
Here we are. Me looking like a painting off of...
just a Greek painting or like... but
Italian Renaissance.
Something. I don't know. It was just too gorgeous.
In St. Peter's Cathedral... she's
already
all.
Banking on the end of the world, making her son a sir, because there ain't gonna be no knights in the next 20 years anyway, so she's just knighting her babies now.
Oh my gosh.
She knows that she's gonna be, like, really royalty.
I mean, she, what do they say? Speak it into existence?
Mm-hmm.
She's doing it.
I mean, she's the queen, so.
Taking notes. I'm taking notes. $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, $1 million, $1 million.
$100 million, $100 million, $100 million. Oh, huh.
Speak it. Speak on it.
Speak it. Okay. Speak it. And you'll have it. Yes.
Amen. Or whatever you believe in.
Yes.
All right. So that's the John, right?
Yeah, that's the John. All mm-hmm. good news. All fun news.
Yes. All. Nothing but good things this week.
Yay.
Time to move on.
All right. So it is time for a little talking from me. It's part you better work, part that crunchy life, part check it, part Britney's anxiety corner on her own. So, you know, we were gone for a while, and you know, the main reason why we were gone for the past few weeks is B's computer was broken. And then, you know, the internet decided to eat the last thing that we did. So, but during that time, I was going through a bit of a medical crisis. And I'm still going through that medical crisis. It's come to a new normal. It's turned to a new normal, a new understanding of my life, a reset to my reality. So a few weeks ago, I woke up with some numbness up and down my legs that was very troublesome. I was like, what the hell's going on with my freaking legs? I went to a clinic. The clinic was like, we can't really help you. You know, one of those like urgent care places. They told me to go to a neurologist, gave me some information on a neurologist I could speak with because I didn't know because I'm still new to Colorado. So I got to see a neurologist in like a couple of days. It was really fast. Thank God I live in Colorado because that would have never happened in Philadelphia. me seeing a doctor in 48 hours. And then, you know, I met with that neurologist. They did some tests with me. They brought up some letters, M and S, that it could possibly be multiple sclerosis. And I was like, okay, cool. But like, what really is it? So we got some blood work, and that didn't prove to be things that might look like MS because the blood work wasn't to see if I have MS. Spoiler alert, I got diagnosed with MS after an MRI. So I'm going through a lot because, you know, you are living your life, you know, hiking. This is my life, going to work, enjoy, like, understanding my new city, trying to keep connections with people that are far away, dealing with all the other bullshit that is living, and I got slapped with the diagnosis that is going to change the course of my life forever. If you do not know, multiple sclerosis is an autoimmune disease that attacks the myelin on your that wraps the nerves that are a part of your central nervous system. So my body attacks itself. That's what autoimmune means. And there's no cure for that. There's ways of treating it. You know, it's a disease that's been around for a long time, and plenty of companies have figured out how to make money off of it. So there's, you know, it doesn't mean I'm around for a while, but there's just a new life that I have to start accounting for. It was really tough getting the diagnosis. You know, I suspected that was going to be the diagnosis.
Crazy to me
Well, I do have some family members that have it. I have had some instances that I could have, like, gotten checked up on and I didn't get checked up on that sort of matched it. I've even, like, because I've seen these things, I've even said stuff like that, like, that's something that might happen in my future. Like, I've unconsciously have been preparing for it or something, or like known that, like, this is something that could happen to me. That I don't know what that means about me, but that's just something that has been in the back of my mind, for better or for worse. So yeah, it was really hard to get the diagnosis. I got it while I was at work. My doctor told me over the phone. So I ended up not staying at work because I don't know if anyone could just continue to do whatever the hell they're doing after getting such news. We're still trying to figure out, like, what's going to happen next. So, like, yes, I do know that I have some signs that came through my MRI that could be MS. It's I have to do, like, to, like, get, like, that final confirmation, I have to get a spinal tap. Yeah, it's not going to be fun, but I'm ready for it to just get to the final understanding of what's going on. And then we'll start some treatment and start trying to make me feel better. Being the type A person that I am, I've already done tons of research. And I've already read a whole book about, like, the steps that I'm going to need to take to be healthy. So the one thing there's a huge community for people that have chronic illness. And so I've been looking and learning from them and seeing how they keep themselves inspired and happy. And the main thing that they do is really take ownership of their health. You know, it's not a doctor that's going to make me feel better. I mean, they might prescribe me some medication that will. But it's going to be the actions that I take every single day that's going to make me be healthier. And there's things that are always in your control and is always going to be in my control to make sure that I'm thriving. So, you know, really being focused in on my diet, really caring about, really truly caring about getting outside every single, all the time, even when I'm tired and fatigued. Like, the symptoms that, like, what's really important to understand about MS is that it looks different in every single person. You know, I've been chatting, been making some internet friends with folks that have recently gotten diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and their symptoms are completely different from mine. You know, some of them, they've been dealing with vertigo, and their fatigue has been even worse than my fatigue. One of them lost vision in their eye because it attacked the, you know, their optic nerve was attacked. And that's something that, you know, that is very common with it. That's usually the thing that happens to people that gets them their diagnosis. But, you know, I didn't have to have that happen to me to get there. So I'm, like, finding all these, understanding of all these little blessings that are happening. You know, there are, you know, the fact that I didn't have to suffer that much in order to get this, to get close to this diagnosis is great. The fact that I'm magically in a city in a part of the country that doesn't have high humidity, which is, you know, that exasperates multiple sclerosis, is a blessing. Hey, multiple sclerosis is on every single list for medical marijuana in every state that has medical marijuana. I will always have medical marijuana if I want it. So, yay, blessing. You know, there's stuff, like, I'm in a state that allows that to be very available to me. If I was still living in Pennsylvania, it wouldn't be. You know, there's just a lot of things that I'm trying to focus on. Because, like, yeah, it is freaking scary. You know, if you understand how this disease progresses, it progresses hard on people. You know, people lose their ability to walk. People lose their ability to swallow, they lose their memory, lose a lot. There's a lot that I can end up losing, but it also puts in perspective how lucky I am for the movement that I have, for the body that still functions and can do things. And then as I get better, I will continue to honor that body and honor this place that I get to be in. So it's like, put me in all this like good space, bad space. And it's all a part of trying to cope. You know, I am 4 days into having this diagnosis. You know, 4 days, and it's like 4 days of a bunch of more days. It's 4 days of like thousands of more days. I asked you guys all to just go and learn more about autoimmune diseases and chronic illness. It's something that, you know, people in your life could be suffering with right now, because a lot of chronic illness you can't see. If you look at me right now, you will not know. When you guys see me on the 23rd, hopefully you won't be able to tell that I have it. You know, something terrible could happen between now and then. But hopefully it won't be that way. And like I'm walking around, people can't tell what's going on. Like, but that's the nature of chronic illness. And there's people out there that are hurting that, you know, want you to know, don't want to be the way that they, like, don't want to be a burden and don't let you know what's happening. So if you know anyone that's struggling with a chronic illness, with autoimmune illness, learn about what's going on with them so you could be a better friend and ally for them. I mean, because, yeah, it's totally in their court to keep themselves healthy, but when people are understanding of those problems, of like, you know, of the idea that, you know, I'm not going to be able to go to work every single day. Like, I'm gonna have to call sick on days that I feel bad, and I won't be able to go out and do the thing, like do everything that I want to do whenever I want to do it. But as long as you have friends that understand that, like, oh, right, I'm saying no to this. It's like everything. It's like when we talk about mental health, you know, when we're saying, you know, it's time to say, you know, it's time to take a rest. It's the same thing with your health. Sometimes your body is telling you you need to take a rest. And if you don't listen to it, you're hurting yourself. So, yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to cope. I'm trying to navigate this also with my partner. Because, again, it's not just happening to me. It's happening to the both of us. And so we're trying to figure out, like, how... What that means. And we'll be, you know, totally figuring that out forever. And I feel like it's something that people don't talk about or really know. It's like, how do you cope with these things with another person, not just with yourself?
Yeah. I just know that I will be doing my research. I will be reading. I will be learning to be a top-notch friend that I can be. Because I really don't know anything about it. I've heard of it. I mean, I have an aunt that has lupus. So, like, autoimmune disease.
Very adjacent, yeah.
Yeah. And it's been, like, a conversation I've had to have with my doctor about how my aunt had no children. And I'm one of the first girls on that side of the family. So it was like a conversation that both me and my older cousin had to have of like, this is genetic, this runs in your family, this happens mostly in women, this is something that you need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing I did learn quickly, was two of the things I learned was that types of weather that aggravate MS, and then that it is an adjacent to lupus. And I feel like from my understanding of lupus and having to learn that, I will be able to apply some similar things to MS. But also grateful and lucky to be around people who have forced me to always be aware that autoimmune diseases aren't something that you see on the outside. Mm-hmm. And will work hard to keep reminding people I meet of that. That, I mean, I don't know anything about what anyone else is going through, whether it's autoimmune disease or just their everyday life. So, ready to learn with your journey as a friend, even though Thank you. I'm not close by.
Another thing that I learned about MS, that when I was doing all this, when I was starting to do my research, all the different websites that I would go to would categorize MS as a European disease, as something that white people from the Northeast only get.
What?
Yeah. It was like really bizarre to me that I would see that on certain sites. And it only took, it took me to go to like the MS, one of the foundations that talked about some studies about African Americans and MS and the prevalence that it is in our community, and that it has an even higher chance of happening to black women.
Hmm.
This, you know, this European
like disease. Lupus?
Like lupus.
Because, like, the most what I've learned with lupus is that it's most prevalent in black women. That is crazy.
And so, like, that's the thing. That's the main thing that I want to do is try. Is if you go, like, as you do research, if you start doing research on it, you'll see that there's not, like, when you go to those different sites and things, you know, it's very much centered on white women's experience. Especially when it comes to autoimmune disease, on a rich white woman's approach to feeling better. Which, not saying that all the ideas and all the things are not valid, it just doesn't have a care for different people's understanding of life, other people's circumstances. And so that's, you know, that's like the shitty thing. And then I found some other women of color that have it, that have MS, and like they're really trying to be more visible, because again, it's not, it's for us to talk about these things, we have to have more visibility about it, in the same way that, you know, black people were known for not talking about mental illness. I mean, there's still a shroud of secrecy when it comes to the main ailments that, like, do medical ailments and how they affect people in our families, and how we talk about that, how we center it. It's more like, I don't want to have to be the sick person that has to always ask for a ride or something like that because my family doesn't understand what I need. And that happens in all families, but you know, I'm just looking at how my family has reacted to the people that are sick in our family. You know, and health is so important. And no one really wants to talk about when people are sick on any level. I mean, we hide that so much. It's so hidden in our society. And then as you move towards disability too, you know, from you know, there's chronic illness to disability, and again, the way that we keep we keep people hidden. We keep that hidden, like the representation of people with disabilities functioning and thriving is very low. How many doctors do you know with a disability? Like, and how helpful that would be to meet with if you were about to go and have need to be in a wheelchair to meet with a doctor that has actually gone through that. Yeah, so that, I mean, I'm digressing. Those are the type of things that I'm fascinated with now, because I have to be. And when it's so upsetting that, you know, you have to get hit in this way for you to have that empathy or even try to understand, literally a whole part of the internet opened to me once I got this diagnosis. I'm meeting chronic illness, Facebook and Instagram all day. You know, finding these communities of people that I can talk to that are going through the same shit. That's what happens to you when things like this happen. You start breaking into this new world. It's a new world that has opened, and it becomes a question of how do you want to be a part of this world? Do you want to sit and listen, watch, and that's where I'm at, and watch, or do you want to be an active participant in it, which I'm hopefully trying to do.
Well, we're here for all of it.
Thank you.
Of course. Anything else you wanna add to your big discovery?
Watch out for more stuff from me about it, because I'm in the place of processing, and I process through writing and talking, so there will be projects and things soon.
We're excited. I'm excited to read, to listen, to learn.
Thank you.
All right. We're gonna keep chugging along. I feel like my check it is ugh. Weird. You know, I talked to you guys about going to therapy and going to group therapy, and I know that I shared a check it a while about this article about how you can work to be better and you still mess up. And I really have a hard time with that. Mostly with self-esteem. I know, when it comes to navigating the world and interactions with other people, there's always something to learn. There's always something you don't know. There's always something you should be listening to, and learning about, to ensure that you are creating a space and environment around you where people feel comfortable. And that's really important to me. I wish that I would hold that level of importance of making sure that I'm comfortable and taken care of in the same way for myself, in terms of self-esteem and thinking. I don't know if it's because I haven't had group. We decided to take some time off for the summer, which I remember mentioning is ironic because particularly women with larger bodies in the summertime, it's a completely different experience of how you dress, how other people dress, the heat, the just overall lethargic feeling of the summer. And I was like, oh, it's so funny, at a time where people are trying to go to the beach or just trying to walk outside without feeling like they're roasting on a pit of fire, that we're taking time off this group. and not, like, meeting each other to talk about the things that we go through in the summertime, with it, whether it's clothing or just, like, your overall feelings of existing as a non-thin person in the heat. And so I have been struggling a lot with physical self-esteem, and I have to keep reminding myself that it's okay to struggle with that, because I'm unlearning years and years and years of just not even, like, the funny, sarcastic self-deprecation of just, like, actual self-hate. And it's hard to not only unlearn that, but, like, recognize that you're not as far along in your journey as you thought you were. Mm-hmm. And I recognize that a lot of people perceive that I am really far, or that I'm at the end of my journey and just, like, live in this space of self-love and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know if that's, I'm falsifying anything when I interact with people, or it's my, like, frankness about everything that makes people assume that, because I am quite frank and quite honest, that means I'm in this place of, like, endless self-love. But, like, in my frankness, I'm quick to let you know that that's not where I'm at. And if anything, I recognize that, unfortunately, a lot of things trigger me more than I had perceived to think negatively about myself, physically. And I keep saying physically because I'm very comfortable in this space of of my personality, or how I interact, or how other people perceive me. And that was something I struggled a lot with, and not saying that I don't still struggle with, and I know that I'm rambling, but as always, I'm, like, working through this even more as I talk to you guys about this. But I am at a point with my personality where it's like, if you don't like it, if you don't like my frank honesty about a lot of things, if you don't like how I express how I'm uncomfortable with things, or how I get really loud and really excited when I love things, or how I'm really sarcastic, and yeah, if you don't like that, then that's on you. Or, like, I'm really smart, and I think it's okay to say that I'm really smart. And I know that I'm really smart because I know that I don't know everything. To say, like, it's okay to struggle. We're all struggling with these things. This is what I'm struggling with. There's no end to this journey. You don't reach a final destination of, like, I've reached peak self-love and there's never going to be anything to waver how much I love myself or my self-esteem, because that's unrealistic. So it's a reminder for you, it's a reminder for me, it's a reminder for all of us that there's no end point, there's no destination. There will be bumps in the road, maybe every day, maybe once a month, maybe once a year, maybe every hour, who knows. But that's okay, that's okay, that's okay, that is okay. And I had to check that in myself. So y'all should take time to check that for in yourselves too this week. And every week, really.
Yeah. It's like, I'm connecting to your message and sort of thinking about the things that you might think you might let go. Like, it stopped being top of mind. Some of, like if so, so if you have, like, I know that I've been going through anxiety, lots of social anxiety, a lot of performance anxiety in work. And sometimes you get distracted by other things and you don't remember where you are in growing in that. And then it hits you again. And then you're like, oh, shit. I thought, like, because I was distracted with this other thing, I thought I would, I like, that got magically fixed. that performance anxiety or that self-esteem issue doesn't exist anymore because I'm focused in on this other thing, or I'm like, or this other thing has stolen my attention in some way. But none of that stuff goes away completely, and it will creep up in that work that you have done. Sometimes might not be at the same space because you haven't been working on it, because it hasn't been top of mind in that same way. And that's okay, because, like, with everything, there's step forwards and there's steps back. And again, there's no freaking destination. We're not trying to hit, you know, self-esteem, anxiety, self-care, nirvana. It's a constant work. Like, I've been noticing a lot of people in the internet space really talk, the people that, you know, bloggers and shit, are really been focusing in on, like, self-care. And a lot of them have been honest, finally, because I feel like there's lots of people that, like, write about their self-care. It's just sort of like, here's a bunch of ideas for things that you could do. I like to take a bath. I like to listen to music, and that's cute. But, like, I haven't been real, like, how hard it is to even do those things. It's not just, like, a list of, like, I should do all this shit. But it's, like, it's hard to even do it. It's hard to even calibrate what is the thing that's good for you. Because, yeah, you can read everyone's listicle. You can watch every YouTube on every 900 things you should do for your self-care. But if you don't know which one works for you, and you haven't put in the work of figuring that out, like, what is the thing that puts you back to equilibrium? And you don't know, like, the 5 things you can go do tomorrow to, like, to feel better. You haven't done that work. You've just identified something that you should be doing. And so, and the work is, when you're in that bad mood, whatever that may be, to try one of the 900 things that someone has said should be in your self-care program. Is it, you know, washing your hair, calling your mom, or writing in a journal, whatever. But if you have never gone through the act of doing it, you're still going through this blind.
And that's, yeah, I'm really over the listicles thing. Mm-hmm. I'm really over
those overproduced videos of, like, this is my self-care routine. And I'm like, no, this is what you put together in a video. And that is great. And that's helpful for people to see it. But also, we need you to be real about it too, and not present self-care, but actually live self-care.
And how everyone's capitalizing on it. Mm-hmm. I wrote something, it's sitting in my drafts for my website, about it. About a lot of things that I've been thinking about that we have such a warped idea on. And warped in the sense that we haven't personalized it or made it our own. So we just see everyone else's idea of it for themselves and think that we have to have the same thing. And that's not how anything in this world works. Nothing. There's nothing that works that way.
That is the truth.
So, like, keep learning and growing with us, y'all. Like, I'm not there. I do this check it with y'all, and I do this check it because these are just things I constantly have to check with myself. And I'm talking, like, not just once a week when I'm talking to y'all. I'm talking every day. And for this particular check-it, it's now, like, right now, I don't know why. I don't know what it is. And that's, like, again, part of the work is, like, figuring out what's triggering those thoughts. What's the
trigger, yeah.
But right now, it's, like, an every hour feeling, truly. And it sucks. And that's part of it sucking so bad is that I'm conscious of how wrong my perception of myself is, and again, and how it is unlearning. So yeah, we're all on a journey. Both of us doing this constantly have to go back and start from square one of even figuring out what the thing is that we do to make ourselves feel better before we can even actually do the thing to make ourselves feel better. So it's like every day is square one.
Every day is an experiment. That's sort of been a thing that I've been latching on to, is this idea that, like, I'm a scientist, and my test study is me. And, like, it's before this MS diagnosis, it was, like, figuring out putting life in order in a way that makes me feel less anxious. How do I do the things that make me not nervous about the next step that I have to take? How do I, you know, ease upon that? And that's still there. And I'm working a little bit on, like, this other part of me, but I'm also trying to figure out how those two things are connected. And, like, how is that all integrated into your full self? Because they don't live on different worlds. You know, your understanding of your body and your understanding of your mental health is the same thing, because it's your freaking body. Your head is connected to your body. Like, your body is connected to your head. Like, so these things aren't, like, and that's why it makes no sense when, you know, healthcare doesn't, you know, take care of mental health care, because of course your brain's not the same. But I've really been, like, latching on to this. Like, I need to test. I need to see what affects me. Because in many ways, we all go blindly and just do things and not evaluate how it affects us mentally, physically, emotionally, everything. And it's a lot of different things that you want to, like, I've been wanting to evaluate. Like, it was, you know, how I was saying I wanted to do less watching the news because I know it's affecting me somehow. So how about I go, like, you know, stop watching it for a little bit and see how it changes me. You know, we've talked about wanting people needing to take a break from social media because we blindly do it, but we don't examine how it's affecting us. The same, and, like, it's everything. You, like, the experimentation of understanding how all these things affect you. We'll figure it out. And then it'll change again because you change because you're a freaking person, and that's why you're constantly, you're the mad scientist trying to figure your shit out.
Yeah.
And you'll have that one day where you're like, I got it. And then it will change.
Yeah.
And that's being human, and it's great. It's beautiful. We live.
And we learn.
And you get loves.
Live, laugh, love, learn. Live, laugh, love, learn. Hashtag. All right. That was a good check it. That was a good tag team to check it there.
No, yeah.
So we don't have an anxiety corner this week, y'all. Because we're gearing up. We're saving it. We're holding out. We're getting ourselves real anxious for anxieties. Assemble! Assemble! I literally only did that because if y'all could see Brittany right now, I feel like that's exactly how she would have said it.
That's exact. I was like, I forgot that this was an audio cast and not a video thing. Because I'm like doing all this like hand stuff. You'll see it when you come to our live show on July 23rd. You'll be able to see all of our facial expressions and our weirdness, because we will be there in the flesh at Tattoo Mom at 6 o'clock on July 23rd.
O'clock. Sunday, July 23rd. After the MLK sit-in, before the new season of Insecure, have the best Sunday of your life. Come eat tater tots. Wind down and get ready for Issa Rae to make / ruin your life. See a live show with your fave girls. Share your anxieties with us. Live your best life.
Yes. So for Anxieties Assembled, we are asking you guys to share your anxiety. We are sharing Anxiety Corner with you. So come with something that you're anxious with. It doesn't have to be about 45. I know we talk about 45 a lot, but there's a lot of other things in the world that you could be anxious about, and we invite you to come and share and let it out and get that catharsis and feel better. Pass that anxiousness on to other people that are less anxious about it, and have a beer afterwards with us.
Yeah. Sounds like the best day.
So if you want to like secure your spot to be a part of Anxieties Assembled, you should email blackgirlslaughing@gmail.com. And we'll make sure that you get to do it. Or we'll be calling on random people.
Yeah. Yeah, we might pick you. So pick yourself before we pick you, huh?
Exactly. You don't want to be that person that's like, no, we'll kick you out.
You have to leave.
But yay. Yeah. No anxieties today.
No anxieties today. I had too good of a weekend to even think about
anything. What did you do this weekend?
So I went to New York for my second K-pop concert.
Oh my gosh.
So Friday I went to New York and I saw Monsta X at PlayStation Theater with a bunch of girls that I've made friends with around my age. They're early to mid to late 20s that also happen to love K-pop. I also got to spend the weekend with my friend Sarah, who I've talked about many times because that's who I stay with when I go to New York. And it was really fun. It was like the most, we like joked around and said it was like the most on-brand weekend. Or like really on-brand, not the most on-brand because there are complexities to me that we're missing. But we yeah. went to the concert Friday and then we went to a Broadway show on Saturday.
Ooh, what'd you see?
The Great Comet, because she Ooh. Works. Yeah, and Ingrid Michaelson is in it right now, who I love.
Ooh!
And she was amazing. And then the new Pierre is this amazing black man who replaced Josh Groban. If you follow the show at all, he replaced Josh Groban in the show. Was amazing. Everyone was amazing. The set design was insane and beautiful. And this is the most random musical ever. I don't know who said yes, let me give you tons of money to back this. It started in Ars Nova, who's known to do like really obscure, really mm-hmm. I don't know what to think of other than random, because it's not the appropriate word, but really obscure musicals. And then obviously a producer sees them and decides to back them, and Ars Nova is known for doing great work. So that's the story of how Great Comet made its way to Broadway. Beautiful set design, beautiful costume design. The music was amazing. It has a similar vibe of Company, where people in the actual cast play instruments all throughout the show. Nice. As part of the show. I got to sit in a box. So pretty much on the stage for the show. It was amazing. Everyone, there's stairs all over. Everyone runs around the whole theater. It was beautiful. We went to brunch, and then we went to Korean barbecue, and then we went and sang karaoke, and then we went and got ice cream, and it was just like a vacation that I've needed that I haven't got to have because I didn't have a job, so I wasn't obviously spending money on vacation. Mm-hmm. And I don't foresee me going on a big trip in 2017 other than to Colorado, but like a trip out of the country like I try to take. So like little weekends like this I'm going to be holding very near and dear to me this year. I don't know what I'll be doing in August, but September I'll be going home, I know that, and then October I will be coming to visit you, so we'll see what I do next month.
Next month is your birthday.
I know, so I don't know what I'm gonna do yet. I have no idea what to do for my birthday. No clue.
But I'll do something grown and on your own.
I'll think of something. I think that I'm spending the day. So they have this like Fat Babes Day at a beach in New York, where just like a whole bunch of like non-thin, beautiful women of all varieties go to the beach and hang out and eat and barbecue and play games and splash in the water. And my group is actually planning a trip to go up together to get ice cream and to go up together, which happens to be on the day of my birthday.
Oh, perfect.
So that's exciting. But like in the evening when I come back to Philly with like my friends, I don't know what I'm gonna do, or like Friday or Sunday. I don't know yet. So we'll see. But that's what I did. That's partially why I'm losing my voice. Because I had a fun-filled weekend.
Yeah, that's so much fun.
It is. So many K-pop concerts, so little time. All right.
Hey, it's our favorite segment. It's our signature segment. It is Giggle. Cackle, roar.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've done it. Like, it's true. Been like a sweet like 10 episodes, I feel, since I've made a roar.
Okay. I feel like 10 is pushing it, but I'll let you have it.
Well, at least 10 weeks. So I'm gonna start it off with just some summer movies that I've been digging. And the main one being Spider-Man Homecoming. I really enjoyed that movie. I saw it when it came out. It is really, really, really good. It was fun. It was like kids being kids. I just had a great time with that movie. If you want to just like go and just like not think about shit and just be excited to see some teens flying in the air. and see... Michael Keaton as an actual Birdman after being Birdman. it's a great movie. I had a great time. Yeah, they got the diversity of Queens right. There's some really fun Easter eggs for future movies with beautiful black people that are going to happen, which is like really great. I got super excited because, yeah. The one man that I will leave my husband for pops up in it. So.
I don't know who that is.
Oh. Donald Glover.
Oh. I knew that. I was like, is this somebody new? Is this somebody I don't know?
Who Donald Glover. Glover won. He's got all the talent.
Who we talk about?
He's got all the talent. I want him to put that talent in me.
Okay. I haven't seen the movie yet. Maybe I'll go see it. But I'm going to jump in now with my giggle cackle roar because that was crazy and unexpected. So I'm going to start mine off with a fun fact. Fun fact is my favorite movie of all time is Aladdin.
Oh!
As a kid, as an adult, There's no category. It transcends all categories. Aladdin is my favorite movie. It has been. It always will be. And Disney and the peeps that have been doing the live action version of everything announced that they were doing a live action version of Aladdin. Hollywood TV film being the way it is in this white supremacist society and world that we live in made a comment in complete ignorance that it's really hard to find someone to play Aladdin. Which, first through fifth of all, what?
Got all these damn brown ass countries. You can't go and like do a casting call. Like,
what are you talking about? There aren't like actors everywhere and everything, brown actors that have been pigeonholed into roles of like playing terrorists.
Yeah, it's not hard. It just rename it Terrorist A, and it would be easy for you to fucking find the people to call in for that.
You would have had an endless... You would have been like, oh, we already know who we have.
Well, what kind of terrorist do we want to have? Do we want a dark one or a light one? Do we want to...
Like, do we want him to be tall or do we want him to be stout? Like, do we want him to... Like, do we want him to look like he's from a specific country? Or do we want to
keep it... Is he rich or is he poor? Or is he,
like, do we want to keep it a vague brown or, like, pinpoint the brown that he is? Like, not even, like, just, like, off the top of your head, like, Dev Patel has been in everything, like,
and is gorgeous, since... and would have been a fantastic Aladdin. Might just be a little too old, if anything.
No, he's not. He's beautiful enough to do whatever he wants. I am so obsessed with him, and especially his long hair, and his beard, and his mustache. He looks... Oof. Next level beautiful right now.
That anyways, beard. That beard. Oof.
I'm getting real hyped up because I find him to be... It's asinine how attractive he is.
He has grown up so much since Slumdog Millionaire.
And I loved him in that.
Yeah.
In Slumdog Millionaire, I was like, wow, he's so pretty. Like, that was the word I kept using. I was like, not even like handsome. Like, he's beautiful to look at. Just beautiful. But I don't know if he can sing.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised because he is an English born actor, and I feel like there's often a crossover in training there more than you see in American actors to also have vocal abilities, which is amazing and awesome and great, and I wish people took more stock in that. But anyways, that's, like, one name just off the top of my head of, like, who could play this role. And I don't work, again, I don't work in films, so I know that all of these people know tons of people. And that's,
just like any of the brown people that are in the Broadway musical Aladdin right now.
What a concept of, like, using not a giant name for a film. Well, what a concept. But they have now said that they... There is a brown person that exists that could play Aladdin. So they announced the cast for Aladdin, Jasmine, and Genie. Playing Aladdin is, I'm really terrified. I'm probably going to butcher this.
Go ahead, just do it.
Mina Massoud.
Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah.
You can find him on Instagram, Mina Massey, MENAMASSEY. He's beautiful. He is ripped. He has one of the best parts of Aladdin, and the design that they did for him is big brown eyes and like an overwhelmingly charming smile, which is part of what Aladdin has to be such a successful con artist before he is off the street, and this guy has got that. So it's very exciting. I've seen people go back and forth about the woman they've cast as Jasmine, because she is biracial. And I don't want to get into that conversation because this is part of Giggle Cackle Roar, but maybe that's something I'll talk about in the live show, because it was... As a biracial person, I understand the complexity of the conversation of absolutely understanding why... Yeah, it's just a really big conversation and a really important conversation that needs to be had, and I don't want to have that right now, but... They also announced Will Smith as the genie. And I'm intrigued. I'm excited. I think Will Smith is funny. I've always thought Will Smith is funny. The guy can sing. The guy can rap. He can be over the top very well.
I just hope they don't turn Friend Like Me into a rap.
No, I really don't either. Because,
like, we don't need that.
Though I'm intrigued and excited for the live action, for Will Smith, for this whole thing, there will never be a friend like Robin Williams playing Genie in my heart. Like, ugh. He was Genie. He is Genie. But I'm excited for the live action film. I'm excited to see Will Smith remake Genie. I'm excited to just see the beauty. Like, I can only imagine, like, the costume and set design. I hope they do it well. I hope they come out like they did with the Wiz's costume and set design, because, man, they nailed it. So I'm really crossing my fingers that they have a team just as smart and capable to show us the beautiful colors of Prince Ali, Fabulous He, Ali Ababwa. I'm really excited, and hope my hopes and dreams of just being an Aladdin stan aren't completely crushed.
I'm intrigued with how they're going to address that Aladdin is, and like, Aladdin is not a good caricature of the Middle East. And that it's not, like that's the thing that's been so confusing, with people, like, caring so much about who's gonna play Aladdin and Jasmine, when the first movie, I mean, the songs are a racist caricature of Arab, people of Arab descent. So, and it's not based in reality. And so, it's just, like, how do you, like, do you want the representation of this to be a little bit less racist? Like, just, like, slightly? How are they going to address just, like, how we've kind of changed in that way since Aladdin was made in, like, 1992 to like, now, you know? And, like, they had those conversations, you know? I've read all the damn books. I took American Studies classes about Disney shows, about Disney movies that, like, you know, they talk about that. Like, we've talked about it. It's been unpacked, but how is that going to be represented in this new one? And I think they're trying to only do it by casting some people that could actually be from the land, the mythical land that they've yeah. created of inside of Aladdin.
That's I think that's the most important part, is that this world is not real. Like, this is he was never pinpointed to a specific country,
yeah.
to a specific city, to even a specific I'm gonna say brownicity. Like, he's just brown. You can make an assumption of, like, a general geographic location, but even then you could be completely wrong. Mm-hmm. I've seen people say Moroccan. I've seen people say Iraq, Iran, wherever. Like, you have no idea, because this is not real. This is not, it's not real. It's not reality.
Yeah.
It's not. But I know that, which is why I'm smart. And
this specific reason is why B is smart.
I just like the movie because
It's fun. It's beautiful.
It's fun. The music is exciting. I loved Robin Williams as a kid. He was the first actor I could pinpoint and be like, he's my favorite actor. Jasmine, though we are not the same, quote, ethnicity, was the first brown princess I had seen in Disney.
Everyone loved her because of her brownness. It was like her and Pocahontas were like the ones that black girls were. You were either down for, you loved Pocahontas because you knew Vanessa Williams did the song, or you loved Jasmine, because how could you not love Jasmine?
Yeah, so like
barely in the freaking movie, but it's still a Disney princess.
And she was also the Disney princess that, though she falls in love with the prince, blah 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 blah, was still like, no, I'm getting married for love, not because you think I should marry someone for XYZ. And I was like, yeah, she's cool girl, and she's brown, and she wants to be in love when she gets married. She's not gonna do what her dad is forcing her to do. So, like, that's why I like Jasmine. I didn't have Princess Tiana when I was little.
And Moana. Princess Tiana's whack, so, like, no one cares about Princess Tiana. I feel so bad, but I don't like how they made Princess Tiana. I don't like her, so, but...
Anyway.
That assimilation narrative of, you better... Like, there's points in that movie where she, like, looks dead in the camera and is like... Good people work. And I just feel like it's like this, the way that it was done is just wrong. And it was, anyways. I want to know who's going to play Jafar. Who's going to play Jafar? Who is going to play Jafar? Who's going to be Prince? Who's going to say Prince Abu Boo? where is Jafar?
That was really good. So maybe they'll cast you.
Me? Yay.
I know that in my heart of hearts that they're going to find someone darker to play Jafar.
Oh, well, yeah, that's...
And I'm going to have to roll my eyes because just like...
Ugh. That's colorism in Disney movies.
I know.
All the villains are darker.
But like, yeah, which is, again, like a conversation for another day. Someone who liked Disney movies but always personally resonated more with the villains rather than the, quote, good guys, which I also think is part of why I liked Aladdin, because he wasn't...
He wasn't
a good guy. Mm-hmm. He, like, wasn't an awful human being, but he... Riff raff, straight rat. But he didn't buy that. Anyway.
He was trying to survive and wasn't... Which is real. There isn't good guys and bad guys, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Aladdin should be everyone's favorite.
Why can everyone like Robin Hood... Who stole stuff. But Aladdin's a bad guy. Anyway, conversation for another day. That was Giggle Cackle Roar. Which means...
The show's over!
We did a show. This one's actually gonna make it to the internet so you can hear it.
Yay!
Woo-hoo! So, we did this for the last episode, but since it disappeared, we have to do... something, well, you'll be hearing this for a few episodes. If you haven't noticed, if you haven't seen, if you're just catching back up with us because we haven't had a couple episodes and you see that we post one and you're like, oh yeah, Black Girls Laughing. We're really consistent and now they're struggling with consistency, but they'll get back on it. So I'm going to listen to them. You'll notice that we've rebranded. We have a logo that we feel fits our sound, fits our brand, and is also our faces, so that only makes it even better. And the beautiful logo and beautiful redesign was done by our friend Amy Scheidegger, who has created and is the designer and painter and owner of Rock and Roar Creative, which is something that she created in response to the political climate, the world today. She does a lot of work that is politically focused, politically based. I have a piece of her artwork sitting right in front of me, actually. That's beautiful. But it really gives voice to women, to children, to people of color, to the LGBTQ community. And it operates on the acknowledgement that art and design doesn't give the oppressed a voice. And the idea that the oppressed, that people of color, that women, that children, that the LGBTQ community has always had a voice, that they're often ignored. And she really wants to use her platform to amplify these voices through her design, through her creation, through her lettering, through her drawings, through her paintings. She does a lot of work talking about a lot of things. Like, she has a current series that's talking about being an introvert, talking about being someone living with depression. So all things that very much align with what we talk about on our show. And, you know, also supporting your friends who are artists is very important to us as artists and as arts administrators. So it only made sense to work with her. So you should check her out. Her website, rockandroarcreative.com. You can check her out on Instagram, rockandroar. She's tagged us in things. She's tagged on our page. You know, you can find her on the internet. It's really great. So thank you again to Amy, to Rock and Roar, for our beautiful logo redesign.
Yay!
As we move forward with Black Girls Laughing. Woohoo!
Yeah, she's a great design partner. If you're looking for a design partner, she's the one.
Attentive, thoughtful, all of it. As always, at the end of the show, we remind you that you can find us on the internet, blackgirlslaughing.com. Email us with your anxieties for Anxieties Assemble for our live show at blackgirlslaughing@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, BOKGirlsLaughing with no G. On Facebook, facebook.com/blackgirlslaughing. And on our personal Instagrams, I'm at B Knightley. B like the bumblebee, Knight like knight in shining armor, and then an LY at the end.
And I am at Brie like the cheese, Hines like Gregory Hines, who you still don't know who he is.
Nope.
And please, if you haven't had the chance to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, you really should. We try to have shows every Thursday, and you can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. It's so helpful to us. It is like the best way to pay it forward, is to just drop some 5 stars or 4 if you're, you know, real stingy with your stars, and leave us a nice message would even be even greater. Yeah.
All right, guys. Bye.
Peace. Come on.